Thank you. Thrilled to be here.
Absolutely. And tell me now, did I get your last name right?
You did.
Okay.
Gold star.
Nice, nice. Hey, congratulations on this debut novel, right?
Yes, debut novel.
Gosh, that's so exciting. And you know what? I have to say, like, I mean, you know, I have followed your work. I've known you for a number of years now, and I've followed your writing and your professor, and we're going to get into all of that. But it was just really exciting to kind of see the trajectory of your journey. And then, of course, when I saw a photo of you on social media holding your, I mean, this is a gorgeous book cover, I have to first. It's gorgeous. It's called The Other Half of Happy, and it's a young adult novel. And when I saw you holding it up and I saw the cover of it, I thought, wow, that book looks amazing. I want to read it. And then, but you never know, because sometimes a book looks great. And then,
yes.
You know how the old saying goes. And but your book really is great.
So, inside too. Yay.
Absolutely. The inside is, it's even more wonderful and colorful and vibrant than even the cover. So
thank you.
Yeah. So congratulations, first of all.
Thanks so much.
Absolutely.
It's been, actually, the publishing of this is like the picture in iceberg. And 20 years of writing and submitting poems and getting them rejected and submitting essays and getting them rejected. And then and so it's wonderful to be at this moment, that kind of a fruition moment.
Yeah. And, you know, I can't help but think that all of those various rejections, but also practice moments of writing, of essays, writing of poetry, you know, kind of built towards this novel, because I find, you know, various, I think, strengths that poetry and that even essay has, that quality inside of this novel. And so, you know, actually, why don't we begin maybe by you describing the book for our listeners, the story.
Okay. So the main character is 12-year-old Quijana.
Mm-hmm.
She's named after Don Quixote, which is totally embarrassing. She likes to say that Quixote is Spain's most famous loser.
Right.
And she has to come to terms with that. But she is half Latina and half white, and so navigating the hyphenated identity is part of her struggle. She likes to say that she used to be Pangea, the one continent unsplit, but now in her life there's some new developments. Her Guatemalan cousins have moved to town, and suddenly it matters that she has this Latina half that she has not integrated. And her parents are planning a trip to Guatemala, and she's thinking she will hate this.
Right.
She can't speak the language. She's going to feel just like a failure if she goes there.
Right.
And so her big plan is to not go, and people will have to read the book to figure out and find out how it is that she could possibly not get on that plane with her family.
Right, right. And then, you know, to add to that, her own father always kind of stressing to her the importance or the relevance of her being American, you know?
Yes. She wonders if she's been kind of preparing for the wrong test all this time, because her father has stressed that English is important, that, you know, her assimilating is advantageous, and she has certainly picked that up from the dominant culture.
Right.
So to suddenly realize that there's this missing half, to refer back to the title of The Other Half of Happy, this was not a problem before, but now it's a problem.
Right, right. And, you know, we see that. Actually, why don't we, before I ask you my other dozens of questions I have for you, why don't we have you just read an excerpt, maybe just a little 2-minute excerpt, something small, just so that our listeners can get a taste of what's inside the book.
Okay, sure. This is a little moment when she's opening a package, and it's from Guatemala, and her parents are very excited. She's not quite as excited. So the dad says, "Is it time to get out the package?" Dad asks Mom, his eyes twinkling at me. "Wait right here," she says. She brings in a white box, the packing tape already cut. "From your abuela, for your first day at your new school." Starting junior high, Dad shakes his head. I remember my first day. I wore a new white shirt and polished shoes. I learned to tie my own tie. 12 now. You want to stand out and show everyone who you are. Actually, I'm hoping not to stand out, to not embarrass myself. Everybody knows that standing out in seventh grade is bad, as in disastrously, monstrously, don't be ridiculously bad, especially the first day. I swallow hard and fold back the cardboard flaps. A thick, colorful fabric unfolds in my lap. Tropical birds dazzle my eyes. It seems like a tunic or a long poncho. Yellow animals run in a wide stripe across a blue background. Wow, it's totally beautiful, I whisper. And totally out of the question, no one in the history of seventh grade has ever worn something like this to school, at least not in Burr Oak, Texas.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Words on a Wire, and we are speaking with debut novelist Rebecca Balcarcel, and she's talking about her brand new book. It's called The Other Half of Happy, and she just read an excerpt right now. And, you know, one of the things, Rebecca, that you touched on just now is, well, first, actually, I should say, I want to applaud the authenticity of these characters, obviously, you know, not just, I mean, the cultural authenticity, obviously, as I was going to say, because I know that your background is like Guatemalan as well, but also the kind of the authenticity of a middle schooler, you know, the language of her and her community and her siblings and her friends. It's just incredible. And I found myself laughing and really enjoying the read. So I want to say applaud for that, first of all.
Thank you.
Absolutely. But around, you know, that's one of the sort of the things that runs throughout the book. And that's that Kihana, the central character, is, you know, she's grappling with her own identity, as you mentioned. And one of the things, I think it's around chapter maybe 17, 18, where she's on a bus and she discovers kind of that she's passing as a kind of non-Latina. You know, and she's grappling with this for the first time. And can you talk a little bit about why that aspect was important to bring out for you?
Yes. So you're right. In the scene, some Mexican boys come to the bus stop and she, you know, a slur is said by another student. And she realizes that this mean kid is including her in with the white group and excluding these Mexican kids. And she feels guilty. She's not sure what to do. She's not eager to just jump up and say, wait, I'm brown in that moment. But I did want to include that because this is part of my own experience. I am also half Guatemalan, mm-hmm. and I have both people running up to me and just speaking in Spanish, assuming that I am fluent and that I look brown enough. And then I also have the experience of people, you know, making statements about immigrants or about Latinx people in some slightly derogatory way, and they sort of assume that I'm on board with what they're saying, you know, conspiratorially, like, and I find myself in these awkward moments. And so I knew that Kihana would need to have a moment like that too.
Right. Right. And you know, at that early of an age, you know, in middle school, as she's a 12-year-old, you know, I know, obviously, being a parent, just like you are as well, that, you know, we deal with that, I think, at a younger age. For me, I guess maybe I kind of didn't until I didn't deal with any of that kind of identity so much until I was older, like even in high school, because I grew up in the communities I grew up in Central California. They were predominantly migrant farm working communities. So, you know, the only white folks I actually knew until about high school were my teachers, you know, but everybody I knew in my community and my neighbors, they were all Latino, you know, they were all like me. And that was like my world until, you know, until high school. Then I was like, we moved away, you know, we moved to a city and suddenly my neighbors were, and I had to kind of contend with that. But yeah, and she does this at a young age, you know, that's one of the things I really enjoyed about Kihana, and your portrayal of this character, of this young woman, this young lady coming of age, is that she's really insightful, really smart, really witty, and she's really kind of scrutinizing her situation at a really just a deeper level. You know, it's not just kind of a surface level. She's really digging deep into some of these issues. Why was that important for you that you have this kind of central character in your book?
You know, that's a good question. I think I'm a little bit of an introspective type of person, but I wanted her voice to be in first person, you know, that we're actually in her head the whole time, to get to those deeper levels, the psychological struggle that's going on within her. It seemed to me that that's the most interesting thing in the story. In fact, I had to kind of retrofit a regular plot onto the book in revision because my first instinct was to write poems in her voice, and the novel started out as a stack of poems of this introspective Kiana looking into her psychology, kind of questioning her own decisions and her own family structure and introspecting. And then I realized, wait a minute, I also need to tell a story. So transitioning into a novel, I did, you know, I was able to do that. But it actually was her mental struggle that was the priority for me from the very beginning of writing the book.
You know, and that kind of goes back to what I had suspected, you know, as I was reading it. And that was the comment I made to you. And that's what I was trying to get to at the beginning, is that I do see some elements of the poetic in the characters that are being developed, but also in the language, the description, the narration. You know, it's very vivid. Sometimes it leaps from an image to another image, you know, so it has some of these components of poetry for sure in there. And maybe that's why, it's because you started sort of a foundation. This story was the poetry was a foundation.
I did, yes. And certainly my training, I like to say it was poetry. My first book was a book of poems, and my MFA is in poetry, and I think the poetic training does show through.
Now you and I attended the same MFA program, right? Bennington College.
We did. That's right.
Shout out to Bennington.
Yay, Bennington.
I know, but at different times. I think you were probably maybe a couple of years ahead of me. Like maybe you went out as I was going in or something.
Mm-hmm. I ended in 2002 in January, and it was such a great experience because I was able to take myself more seriously as a writer after that, and give myself permission to prioritize writing, and that set me on a path where I did continue to write and try to publish and submit work. And even though it feels like a long time ago, it was a turning point for me.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, so 2002, gosh, yeah, I was way later then because I graduated in 2011 from Bennington, But you and I actually met in Albuquerque. That's where we first met years ago, in Albuquerque, at the Writers' Conference.
That's right. Yeah. And I love that it was a Latinx Writers' Conference, and that impulse to try to organize and connect and network is a good one to build the community of authors. And you were so generous and impressive and helpful.
I was teaching the workshop there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's how I met you there. And there were they don't have that conference anymore, but it was really a nice conference because it did allow us to communicate, to connect with others, and also to, you know, further our goals, career wise in our own writing. You know, it was really a good experience. That said, what prompted you to write? Because you talked about this being a kind of a 20-year project, essentially. So what prompted you to write this specific story?
Well, I certainly looked at my own life. There's a lot of autobiographical moments in the book. I wanted to try something different I guess, work aimed at adults and work aimed to be specifically poems. I wanted to reach a wider audience. But then the voice started coming to me in poems, and so that was the foundation. And it probably was about 7 years ago that I really started putting it on paper. And in one summer, in a flurry, I created about 60 pages. And I thought, well, maybe this is the book. Like, this is it. But as I started seeing that I could reach a wider audience and I might enjoy telling a story, I continued to develop the more of the narrative and the connecting pieces that would make it a novel. But the root of it really is moments from my life. For example, my abuelos came from Guatemala a couple of times. Mm-hmm. We flew them all the way from there to Texas, only to stand in the living room and have been unable to talk to me, and for me to be unable to talk to them. And, you know, I had heard stories that my grandfather was funny and could do voices and was like a prankster, and I never saw that side of him because his humor wouldn't translate even into English if they had explained it.
Right.
It just was lost, and so that sense of loss certainly spurred the book.
No, I can identify with that. I can relate to that, you know. Absolutely. You know, being, you know, I wasn't, you know, my folks were originally from, born and raised in South Texas. And, you know, they were kind of that generation that had the Spanish beat out of them physically by their teachers, you know, beaten, their knuckles hit with rulers, things like that, if they spoke Spanish. And so my parents made sure then that because of that experience, they were like adamant that our son and our children will be masters of English, you know. And we essentially are. I mean, we're writers, you know, that's the goal here. And you're, you know, you're an English professor. I mean, you know, it's like, so that was what was stressed, to us as children growing up. Fortunately for me, in my case, I was partly raised by my grandmother and grandfather. I spent a lot of time at their houses because my parents worked, you know, they were full-time workers. And so I'd spent a lot of time with my grandmother. So the Spanish I picked up was really through her talking to me. And she picked up her English through me. I would respond in English. That was like our unspoken agreement. She could talk to me Spanish all day long, and then I would respond in English all day long. And she'd learn her English, and I'd learn Spanish. But neither of us forced to speak the other one. We just would listen to it. So,
That's so beautiful. I feel very cut off from my grandparents. And thank goodness I had cousins. And as in the book, I had cousins who were born in Guatemala and were fluent in English, as it turns out, but they were fully bilingual, which is such a gift. And I'm still jealous, and I'm still working on my Spanish sometimes.
Yeah, me too. Yo también.
Okay, excelente. But they gave me a window. You know, it was their mother who taught me to make a tortilla. Yeah. It was they who just sort of immersed me in another world and preserved a taste of that world, literally in food, but also culturally, because they just lived it. And I could dip in and visit them and learn at least a little bit. But I still have trouble with Spanish. And my father, even if I ask him to speak to me in Spanish, he's not in the habit. And he's just spoken to me in English all his life. And
And, you know, if you're just tuning in, you are listening to Words on a Wire, and we are speaking with the debut novelist Rebecca Balcarcel and her new book, The Other Half of Happy, which is out with Chronicle Books. And, you know, one of the things, Rebecca, that struck me right off the bat is that this is a YA book about with a Guatemalan family as the central story. And I tried to think of other young adult books that I've ever read or that I'm aware of that have a Guatemalan family as the central story. Are there other books out there that have that? I know that there's a lot that have, you know, Latino families in general.
Sure.
But
no, it is a bit rare right now. There's a book called The Only Road, which documents it's a fiction book, but it is about a Guatemalan boy coming across the border unaccompanied. There's that, and it's by Alexandria, I'm forgetting her name, but The Only Road. And that is the only one I am familiar with.
Right. So then what books did you look to for inspiration as you composed the book, as just even growing up, books that influenced you?
You know, growing up, I read Little House on the Prairie and Charlotte's Web and, you know, Anne of Green Gables and the, you know, kind of the canon of white characters. And the first time I picked up a book with a Latina character, it was House on Mango Street, like mm-hmm. so many other Latinx authors. And it blew my mind because I realized that Sandra Cisneros had mm-hmm. you know, done something new and that I could write such a thing, you know, that this was a possibility.
Yeah.
And I didn't read it till I was an adult, and it took me some years to process the idea that I could write my own brownness into a book.
Mm-hmm.
I just had no models, actually, for doing that until that book. And then more recently, I tried to read lots of novels with 12-year-olds and mm-hmm. thereabouts, middle grade and young adult. But I still didn't stumble into the Latinx young adult mm-hmm. world mm-hmm. for a while because I started out reading Newbery Award winners, and it took me a while to understand that we do have, you know, we do have other Latinx families portrayed in literature.
Yeah.
And I only found them recently after I was pretty much already on my own, you know, in the publication of this book.
Right. And I mean, I know that, you know, in general, we do have, you know, several young adult, I mean, some great young adult books by Latino authors who, you know, portray Latino families as the central subject, obviously.
Yeah.
One of my favorites being Benjamin Alire Sainz's book, Aristotle and Dante, which is one of my top favorites of all time.
Loved it. I just read it recently. And the Pura Belpre gold medal winner this year is Sal and Gabby Briggs the Universe, Carlos Hernandez.
Wonderful.
And here in Texas, we have David Bowles with his Güero. There's so many. I'm part of a group called Las Musas.
Mm-hmm.
People can Google that.
Okay.
And it's just, you know, like 50 Latina authors in the middle grade and YA and picture book space who are.
Oh, that's great. Las Musas?
Las Musas.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Check that out. And then so this is your debut book, and then it goes on to win some really nice literary acclaim, right? I saw some honors by the American Library Association, the Junior Library Guild, and obviously the Pura Belpre Prize, which is fantastic. And I saw your response that you posted on social media. Tell me about it. How did you feel when you got that?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, they call the winners the day before, but I didn't know that. And I really wasn't expecting to hear from this committee anyway. But I was at a conference, and David Bowles, who we just mentioned, author of Güero, said to me, you know, you might keep your phone on tomorrow. And I said, why? And he said, well, you know, American Library Association conference is going on. They're going to announce the Newbery and the Coretta Scott King and Pura Belpre. And I said, oh, okay, but why would I have my phone on the day before? And he said, well, that's when they call the winners. And so he coached me on this. So I had my phone on, but the day went by, and it got to be 5 p.m., and I thought, oh, okay, you know, they're not going to call. I'm proud of my book. I'm fine. And then a phone call came on my phone with a number I didn't recognize, and I thought, well, okay, so hello, you know. And it was such a lovely call. The committee announced it to me, and they were all cheering in the background. And I was a little stunned because I had already given up on it, and I had already talked myself into being okay. But what a joy.
Nice.
They're so generous. They had to read so many great books, and, you know, tough decision. And
Well, congratulations on that. That's a big achievement for a young adult novel. I mean, it's a big achievement.
You.
So yeah, absolutely. And well deserved, by the way. We have about a few more minutes left. Do you have a smaller excerpt perhaps that you can read with before we head out?
Sure. Maybe, you know, the first paragraph of the book might be nice.
Perfect. That's perfect.
Short. Okay. Yes. So chapter one, I live in a tilted house. A bowling ball on our living room floor a bowling ball on our living room floor would roll past the couch, past the dining table, all the way to the kitchen sink. And if the sink wasn't there, and the wall wasn't there, and the bathroom behind that wasn't there, the ball would roll all the way to my room at the end of the house. That's what it's like being 12. Everything rolling toward you.
Hmm. And that is the voice of novelist Rebecca Balcarcel. I'm reading from her book, The Other Half of Happy. And with that begins the with that opening paragraph begins the story of young 12-year-old Kihana and her family, her Guatemalan family. It's just a really wonderful book. Let me ask you one more question, Rebecca. What do you hope that young readers will take away from this book?
Wow, okay. I really hope that, of course, mixed-race kiddos will see a mirror here in this book, but I think every kid knows the wish to belong. And belonging is what it really is about. She wants to belong in both worlds, in the, her mother's half and her father's, and she wants to belong at school, and that's a universal wish and need that we all have. So I hope kids will enjoy the language, enjoy the story, and then also feel affirmed that they do belong, that we all belong. We are just all supposed to be here together.
Absolutely. And I think that young readers will get that from this book. I'm sure of it, in fact. I got that from this book. So.
Yay!
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. And I have to ask you, of course, one more thing, and that is what's coming up for you? What's next? What do we have to look forward to? Because I'm excited already.
Okay. Well, I am at work on a second book, and it looks like a contract has just come through in the last day or so.
Congratulations. That's great.
How exciting. And so now I'm on a deadline.
How not exciting.
Yes.
The deadline is scary, but yeah.
To have, yes. Yeah. So, and it will feature another mixed character, another girl with a similar ethnicity, but this character is very interested in computers, and her dad has a secret that is going to change her life.
Wow. Well, we look forward to that. And of course, when that comes out, we will have to have you back on our show. And I think that about wraps it up. Rebecca, congratulations. And again, on this book and all of your work, thank you so much for coming on our show.
My pleasure.